to St. Matthew.
Glory to you, Lord.
Some of the scribes and Pharisees said to Jesus, "Teacher, we wish to see a sign from you." Jesus said to them in reply, "An evil and unfaithful generation seeks a sign, but no sign will be given it except the sign of Jonah the prophet. Just as Jonah was in the belly of the whale for 3 days and three nights, so will the Son of Man be in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights. At the judgment, the men of Nineveh will rise with this generation and condemn it, because they repented at the preaching of Jonah. And there's something greater than Jonah here. At the judgment, the Queen of the South will arise with this generation and condemn it, because she came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And there is something greater than Solomon here." The Gospel of the Lord. This conflict between Jesus and the scribes and the Pharisees continues to crescendo in the gospel. Jesus had already cured the man with the withered hand. He had immediately before this scene cured a blind, deaf, mute demoniac. And immediately thereafter, after having witnessed these messianic deeds, they ask, "Teacher, we wish to see a sign from you." And Jesus called the ones asking a faithless and perverse generation. They were constantly seeking signs, even though Jesus was constantly giving signs. Signs are miracles that point to something else, and in his case, they were pointing to his messianic identity as he was fulfilling to the letter exactly what Isaiah, 7 centuries before, had prophesied. A good and faithful generation would have already noted and heeded the signs that he had been giving, as many of the people in the crowds were. But Jesus, even though he said no sign would be given, knew a sign was on the way. The sign of his passion, death, and resurrection. The definitive sign of God's presence in the world, of his power, his wisdom, his love. He announced that through the image of Jonah the prophet. Just as Jonah was in the belly of the whale 3 days and three nights, so will the Son of Man be in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights. And we know how these same scribes and Pharisees responded to that great sign. With faithlessness and continued perversion, literally throwing themselves off course, turning through it someplace else. But the sign of Jonah is far more than Jesus' passion, death, and resurrection. Because the sign that Jonah was to the Ninevites was not somebody who had been in the mouth of a whale for 3 days before having been expunged. Jonah was a sign of conversion. There he was. Even though he was sent reluctantly to preach this message, 40 more days and Nineveh will be destroyed. He didn't have to get to 39. Even though it took 3 days to traverse that ancient city, on the first day, his message began to echo through everyone. And we know that from the kings to the pets, everybody was in sackcloth and ashes, begging God for mercy. And this was a pagan town. And Jesus, that sign of Jonah, came ultimately as a sign to teach people how to change their lives, to turn them right side up, to learn how to live with him. He uses two great historical figures. Jonah is the first one, and he called himself greater than Jonah. The second, he said, was Solomon, that the queen of the south, the queen of Sheba, had journeyed to come to hear his wisdom. And we know what that journey was. It's from the bottom part. Sheba's in the bottom part of the Arabian Peninsula. She made a journey of 1,660 miles 15 miles a day on a caravan, it would take her 110 days, 4 months each way, with all of that stuff, just to hear Solomon's wisdom. Jesus was saying there's something far greater than Solomon here, but they just didn't want to accept. They were constantly asking for another sign because they wanted finally to see Jesus fail, and that would be the sign that would justify their unwillingness to believe him, because they constantly thought he was a fraud. We've got that greater sign than Jonah here, and he's constantly calling us to conversion. He's constantly calling the scribes and the Pharisees to conversion. Scribes and the Pharisees could be described a little bit by that interplay, that dialogue happening between Micah and the response for our psalm today. When Micah, about 730 BC, was preaching in Judah conversion before the Assyrians would take the kingdom of the north, and obviously they themselves were threatened, as we were hearing last week with the prophet Isaiah preaching at the same time to the same people. God asks, O my people, what have I done to you? How have I worried you? Answer me. And they answer, with what shall I come before the Lord and shall bow down before God Most High? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams and myriad streams of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for the crime, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? Like Abraham was willing to offer Isaac. That was the question they were asking, and it was still part of Jewish mentality. How many animals must I kill to do repentance? And God responds in the psalm, I don't rebuke you for your sacrifices. Your burnt offerings are always before me. I'm not taking from your house bullocks, goats. Why do you recite my statutes and profess my covenant with your mouth, though you hate discipline and cast my words behind you? When you do these things, shall I be deaf to it? Or do you think that I'm like yourself? It wasn't enough just to have these expiatory sacrifices. God wanted a conversion that stretched all the way to the heart. That's why Micah, for God, laid it out. God wasn't rejecting sacrifices, but those desires to show their need for God really had to take root in the way that they were treating the others made in God's image and likeness. And so Micah finishes with those famous words, you have been told, O man, what is good and what the Lord requires of you, only to do the right, to love justice, to love goodness, it's translated here, and to walk humbly with your God. Three very simple, concrete actions. To do the right, or to do righteousness. To give others, to give God and others what they're due. To make sure you're not taking advantage of them, which was rampant underneath the surface of Jewish ritualism, was this terrible injustice. And God wanted it to stop. Second, to love. It's translated here, goodness. The word there for goodness is hesed. To love, merciful love. To love when God gives it. And to love it so much that you want to order your whole life. Giving justice is what is due to others. This type of merciful love goes way beyond it, and God summons us to that. And third, to walk humbly with your God. The Christian life, like the Jewish life, was a pilgrimage. God never says stay exactly where you are, but always come and go and get up. It's a walk. And it's a walk with a particular attitude. Humbly before God. St. Jerome translated this word in Latin, solicitum, which is a good translation of the Hebrew. Solicitum means to walk asking God for everything that you need. It's a particular type of humility, the exact opposite of self-reliance. To live your whole life in this type of communion with God, knowing that everything comes from Him, receiving it with gratitude, and then taking these gifts not selfishly, but using them for His kingdom. Today the church celebrates the feast of St. Apollinaris, the first bishop of Ravenna, who was martyred at the same time in Ravenna as Peter and the first members of the church were being martyred in Rome. He was one who was someone who was faithful and good and tried to help those first Christians become this way as well under great duress. His martyrdom likewise became a sign that Jesus is worth living for and dying for. And that sign, like the sign of the first martyrs, was an incredible evangelical gift to the world at the time. The people saw in their faith that God was real. And they were willing to suffer this way because they knew that the sign of Jonah was meant to be applied to their life. And just as Jonah was expunged on day 3, saved by God, just as Jesus rose from the dead after crucifixion, that they didn't have to fear even Roman emperors and sadistic executioners because they would participate in the sign of Jonah. If you've ever been to the Sistine Chapel, sisters, Michelangelo's biggest of all these images is Jonah, and it's right over the altar because we come to meet the sign of Jonah here. Jesus speaks to us with greater wisdom than Solomon. He calls us to conversion with greater insistence than Jonah. And then he allows us to consume that greatest of all signs, making us capable on the inside of doing righteousness, of loving his chesed, and of walking with our hands humbly open, leading the whole world to join us on that pilgrimage home.